welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The next stage of Russia's military operation in Ukraine is about to commence. A partial mobilization has been ordered, and importantly, referendums are to be held in a number of Ukraine's regions. Their goal is to become part of Russia. NATO's war on Russia just escalated. Crosstalking the evolving situation in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Nebojsa Malich, in Washington. He is a blogger and columnist. In Budapest, we have George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Lugansk, we cross to Janis Putkonen. He is chief editor of MV Media. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to George first in Budapest. George, what do you make of the partial mobilization and, importantly, these upcoming referendums, which is a game changer, in my opinion, and shows resolve on the part of Moscow? Go ahead, George.
Well, they are indeed game changers, because the end result, I think, is clear. The vote will be in favor of joining the Russian Federation. I think President Putin made clear that Russia will respect their wishes and they will be members of the Russian Federation, in which case any further attacks on Donetsk and Lugansk, perpetrated by Ukraine with the assistance of the United States and NATO, will be attacks on the Russian Federation and will obviously then be treated as acts of war. And so, therefore, effectively, Russia is making clear to NATO that, you know, within a few days, you will be in direct war with us. Is this where you want to go? And naturally, you know, NATO is coming up with all sorts of ridiculous, blustery comments, sham referendum, sham referendum. Well, there's one issue that realizes that NATO itself had run its sham referendums. It loves referendums when they work in NATO's favor. When they don't work in NATO's favor, then, of course, then NATO cries sham referendum, or better still, let's rule out referendums altogether, as was the case recently when Sweden and Finland said that it would be joining NATO, and NATO immediately said, no referendums, we don't need any stinking referendums. So.
Yeah, and George, we have to point out to our viewers that during the military occupation occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, they had elections during time of war. They're perfectly fine, okay, according to NATO. Janis, let me go to you in Lugansk. You know, we very few people in the outside world get to hear people like you. On Friday starts the voting process here. You folks have waited a long time for this. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It has been a long trip to these moments, and as long as we wait, so suddenly it then came, and it just underlines how geopolitical this Ukrainian civil war here has been since 2014, and very much reminders also from the events from the 2013 and 14 have been heard from Moscow that this game has to stop and putting millions of Russian people to risks, and Russia will take those steps. And of course, it's for us a great favor. It's a new identity. It's a question of honor. It's a question of the roots. And this referendum now gives to everybody to answer the real question. Do you feel to be as a Russian? Do you accept us to be part of Russian Federation? And of course, the full majority will vote yes. But the most important thing is that everybody has this question to answer. And it's a big healing process, which is starting now here in Donbas regions, which have fought for this moment for so long and giving such a big sacrifice to get recognition from Russia in full that you are with us, you belong to Mother Russia, as history has shown.
Yes, it's an act of self-determination, which, you know, people don't like to use that term, as George pointed out, unless it's to their advantage. The way NATO has reacted to all of this, George is right, these are sham referendums and all of that. But, you know, once these republics are accepted in the Russian Federation, as I fully expect they will be, NATO's going to have to come to a moment of truth. I mean, they are involved in this conflict, and it will be, and if they want to continue striking these territories, they'll be striking Russia. So they're upping the ante here. They're the ones that are escalating. Because I would like to go back to ancient history. There were the Minsk Accords, and they were totally ignored, okay? This is payback time. Nebojsa in Washington.
Well, not to be the devil's advocate here, because pretty much the entire Western media is doing this, but you know, the fact that Crimea has been part of the Russian Federation since 2014 hasn't exactly stopped the Ukrainians from targeting it with Western supplied drones and other other weapons. And this has happened repeatedly. And you know, there has been very little response from Moscow. You know, no specific retaliation, because, of course, that is the Russian style. They don't bluff, but there's, you know, their retaliation is always so measured. The problem with that is that, you know, people who are trained differently and think differently, and they expect immediate retaliation, and when it doesn't happen, they get emboldened. And that's exactly what's been going on in the West. I mean, I'm not so sure that these regions joining Russia, you know, tomorrow, next week, whenever, is actually going to deter either Kiev or its Western backers. I mean, we already have that deranged British Prime Minister quoting villains' lines from V for Vendetta in the United Nations. You know, Ukraine prevails. She's a caricature of herself, and yet, you know, there she is. You know, we have the U.S. government with, you know, the president making statements and then his staff walking them back the very next day. What he really meant is, you know, who's in charge here? Who's making policy? Well, it turns out it's probably the deep state that's actually arming Kiev and planning all of its military operations. And, you know, it's very difficult to figure out what these people may think. But if it's if the media leaks by their pet reporters or anything to go by, they are probably going to do some sort of hair splitting word parsing. Well, technically, we don't recognize these, so they're not really Russian territory. And that means that if we give Ukraine nuclear weapons, we're not really party to the war, you see. And they're just so used to manipulating reality with their words, they can't even conceive
of a universe
in which that's not the case.
Yeah, we're going to have to see, and I think we will see a difference here, George, because it's, if Russia accepts these regions as sovereign Russia, it's incumbent upon them to protect them. And I think that that's the kind of escalation that we're going to see. I mean, the command and control centers in Kyiv, in Western Ukraine, are still intact, okay? You know, this is the kind of escalation I'm looking at. George?
Yes, I think so. But Nebojsa is correct that the sensible response that we might have expected from the West and saying, look, we really don't want to go down that path, is probably not something that we should expect. They will try to escalate. And I think President Putin yesterday made clear that, if you start attacking Russian territory, this is a very big deal. And this is something that, you know, we will take very seriously. It's an existential matter for us. And, we've reached a point, it was inevitable that we would reach this point, which is NATO was going to have to ask itself, where does it want to go? How far does it want to go? It's been very cute so far. Oh, we'll send some more weapons. Oh, we'll send some more dangerous weapons. Oh, we'll longer range missiles. Oh, we'll send some drones, some howitzers, MLRS, and all HIMARS and everything else. Oh, and it's very cute, but we'll still say that, oh, it's nothing to do with us. We're not involved in this war. Well, now they're going to be forced with the situation. You take any further steps, you send, you know, these HIMARS, and then these HIMARS are going to be used to kill women and children in Donetsk, as is happening all the time now, then, yeah, you're going to be in war, and therefore you will be liable to retaliation from Russia. So Putin has actually laid it down on the line for them.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready for a few satellites to be destroyed in space, if you get my drift, George, okay? Janice, let me ask you here, because it's so important to get a voice from Lugansk, because you guys have been shut out from the Western world ever since 2014. Tell us the conditions under which the referendum will be held. I mean, do people feel safe? There's always acts of sabotage and terrorism, but this is a determined population to make it to the ballot box.
No, it differs very much from in which place you live here in Donbas. In other places, there are very serious threats, and people are very concerned that should we group anywhere. They are making now these mobile voting systems so that they can prevent this huge wave of state terrorism, what has been in the previous weeks, what has happened here. And certainly the officials are trying to not to make easy to cause havoc in the time of the referendum. It depends very much in which city you are living, how safe it is. The main thing, what I think, that is this mobilization and the whole attitude change, what we see now here in Donbas, and we can see, we can feel that the Russia is bringing out the big guns. And it means that here will come command centers, here will come full force, the war of units, the war of separated operational forces is changing to new scale. And when the big guns come in, it means that certain areas where the core force will come, it will be very safe to be inside and protected by all possible Russian military systems. But will they come fast enough to secure already this process now, which is starting already tomorrow? I don't believe, but I have seen already and discussed it about the how this will be organized, and I see that all measures has been taken so that people can quite safely to go out and give their votes, and so I'm quite optimistic here in the ground how the situation looks.
Well, I think it's very interesting how it'll be played out in the Donbass over the next few days here, because it's going to set a precedent, and that's what I want to talk about in the second part of the program. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the evolving situation in Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the evolving situation in Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Washington. Naboyshe, let's talk a little bit about the partial mobilization here. 300,000 reservists are going to be called up. From what I understand from reports, it's going to take 2 or 3 months to integrate them into this special military operation. They're still calling it the special military operation. And looking at the referendum, how much is this going to be a demonstration effect for other parts of Ukraine? Because if Lugansk, Donetsk, they get out and they become part of the Russian Federation, what kind of message does that send to other parts of Ukraine that have not been all that happy under Kiev's rule? Is this is something that you're going to be watching? Go ahead.
Well, it is. And unfortunately, the message comes too late for Kharkov. Given the treatment at the hands of their liberators, the book is not closed on that yet. And certainly, Nikolaev and Odessa
right.
Know what they might expect in the near future if things continue to develop like this. I mean, this is one of those things of once it happened, people were going, is it really going to change anything now? And, oh, wow, it's long overdue. There really hasn't been much reaction in between. The partial mobilization, I think, is definitely going to help the manpower situation on the front line. And I think it's a recognition of the fact that the nature of the battle has changed because the bulk of the old Ukrainian army has been wiped out and been replaced with, NATO mercenaries and NATO-trained conscripts. And, we're seeing that play out right now. And unfortunately, this war has been far, far deadlier in 6 months than the war that I'm familiar with from, 25 years ago in Bosnia. So my military expertise is limited in that respect, but this is definitely playing for keeps.
Very good point. George, playing for keeps. This is what this message is all about. The greater mobilization, and there's been a lot of support for it. A lot of people have been very frustrated at the slow progress of the special military operation. Now, it can't get more real here. And again, you know, as already the cities like Odessa have been mentioned here, it cuts both ways, doesn't it? I mean, because if they have aspirations of having a referendum, well, they're still under Kiev's rule, and they can have a very terrorizing effect on the population. So that cuts both ways with these referenda.
Yes, it is. And that's really the problem that Russia really faced ever since 2014, which is the only way that you can have a referendum in Ukraine is if there are security forces there to ensure that people will be able to go to the polls without getting murdered. Crimea, if you remember, you know, from 1991 on, had really wanted out from Ukraine, but were prevented from doing so because Kiev threatened Crimea that you try to have any kind of a referendum and you will feel the full force of our armed forces. So that's why in 2014, essentially Russia had to use the forces that it had in Sevastopol to ensure that there actually was a proper referendum in Crimea. So I think the same is going to apply now. But ultimately, the issue is, can Ukraine continue to wage this war? The extent of the casualties that they have suffered, I mean, we had the estimate yesterday from Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu that they have had 60,000 Ukrainian servicemen killed. That is an enormous number. And then if you, you know, add to that the wounded, then you pretty much think, you know, that there really isn't much of an armed force left to continue this fight. Russia has suffered much fewer casualties, and Russia obviously has a much bigger population to draw upon. So it's very hard to see how Ukraine can continue this fight unless, of course, NATO gets directly involved.
And,
that is really going to be the ultimate question that Biden and Truss and Sergeant Shultz are going to have to decide on in the next few days.
You know, Dennis, from what I've seen in reports, the Ukrainian military and their deadly militias, they're hitting civilian targets in the Donbass because their military is spent. It was destroyed during the summer, and you know, all of us are in agreement here. Russia is fighting NATO. That's why President Putin said they're fighting the collective strength of the West. NATO officially is in complete denial. And I think all of us agree that we're going to find out pretty soon how much further NATO wants to get involved in this. Go ahead, Jonas, in Lugansk.
Yes, the NATO instructors has been here for years already manning the nationalist battalions, and this is nothing new, but it just has been enforced to this scale. And we are facing NATO troops. That is exactly what is happening. But I would like to raise up from this referendum question that at least we are talking about referendums. We are talking about the principles of the UN charters, and we are talking about the will of the people. I just want to compare it that Finland was just taken to NATO without any referendums, and the expansion of NATO has been done without any referendums whatsoever. And that's what I like so much in this way of dealing international politics, that referendums, the will of the people, has its concrete weight, so that it really matters for the Russian world, and that makes the whole difference. Do somebody recognize the results or not is a different question.
Well, Janice, do you care if Paris or London or Rome recognizes the outcome of the referendum? Do you care at all? I wouldn't.
Yeah,
okay.
No.
I think you care that Moscow cares. Okay. But, you know, Nebojsa, I see your earlier points here. If you're going to bring in these regions into Russia, you have an ironclad obligation to protect them, okay? And I think that's what we're all worried about, because NATO isn't going to give up easily. No way, okay? Because if they do, it breaks NATO. NATO will be a joke, okay? And that's what makes this situation very, very dangerous. Nebojsa in Washington.
Well, it's become an existential fight for both sides at this point, but that's the collision course they've been headed to for years. The issue, I think, is, as we've rightly mentioned, I don't think very many people in Russia or in the Donbass necessarily care what London or Paris or Washington think. And I think the thinking is the referendum isn't being held for the sake of NATO or the U.S., it's being held for the sake of the rest of the world, which actually does care and which does have standards and does have a sense of shame that has been thoroughly exterminated in the West at this point because, you know, for these Western governments, it doesn't matter what you do, it's only who you are. So they can't do anything wrong and, you know, Russians and the people in Donbass can do nothing right. And in fact, as I've mentioned a few days ago on air, you know, they treat people of Donbass as things. They're not even people anymore. You know, in their eyes, it's perfectly legitimate to, you know, set people in Odessa protesting the Nuland regime on fire. But, you know, God forbid that Yanukovych's police, you know, clubbed the Maidan protesters before they violently overthrew him. It's the double standard. And it's built into the whole, I want to say system of values, for lack of a better term, and which is a pure hoo-hoo morality in which the action itself doesn't matter. And this is the kind of thing that most of the rest of the world doesn't actually believe in and would like to see ended. And so I think from that perspective, having a referendum and having, you know, Russia step in to protect these people is sending a message to them. As far as the West, I don't think at this point they're reachable by much in the way of messaging.
That's such a good point. I mean, it's talking to the deaf and dumb, unfortunately. George, NATO has a big decision to make if they want to continue on this path of escalation, because as Burrell, our favorite, in his blog, he says it's going to be settled on the battlefield. I tend to agree with him. Maybe the only thing I'll ever agree with him on. And so we do know that, that with this greater mobilization here, we're going to see more weaponry. I tend to think that the Kremlin is going to make a pretty strong statement about how it feels about NATO's continued meddling in Ukraine. Go ahead, George.
I agree. And the problem with NATO is that it's already shot its bolt. I mean, it's sent an enormous amount of hardware into Ukraine. There's nothing in Europe left over that they can send. Even the United States armories are becoming depleted. So essentially, it'll be NATO that will have to make a decision, first of all, to move to a war economy to start producing a lot more armaments. And are they going to provide the manpower? Because Ukraine doesn't have the manpower. So therefore, again, you know, it'll be up to NATO to decide, particularly as they're heading into a winter of discontent, without any energy. And it's quite likely that if NATO does get involved, that all energy from Russia will simply be cut off overnight. So, you know, NATO then decides, is Ukraine worth it? Now, you know, according to Ursula von der Leyen and all her friends, you know, say, yes, of course, it's all worth it. You know, does the European public, does the American public, think that it is Ukraine.
Public opinion polls say differently, George. Okay, but then again, this is an elite war. It always is an elite war. Okay, Janice, I want to go to you, and I want you to tell our viewers. We have 1 minute left. I want you to tell us how the people in the Donbass have suffered over the last 8 years. How many people died? How many casualties? As the world closed its eyes to your suffering, give us a few numbers.
Tens of thousands of victims directly. Hundreds of thousands of wounds, massive destruction of infrastructure, huge sacrifices in order to protect the Russian world, the culture and the heritage. Now it's the time to get back home and join the Russian Federation. That is what is the price what has been paid from these days.
Yes, and we also have to remember that what's going to be happening in the Donbass will certainly have a demonstration effect in other parts of Ukraine, and maybe give hope to self-determination around the world, because there are plenty of people that want it, but Western powers always deny them it. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, Budapest, and in Lugansk, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.